Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now. Sticking with the Mariners here, Larry Stone joins us from the Seattle Times on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Larry, you had a great column come out recently with the Seattle Times about how great it could be to see both Jared and Julio take off at the same time. It's kind of the dream we've always envisioned, as well as this organization, right, Larry?
Yeah, and it's not yet really come to fruition. When Julio was really good last year, Kelnick struggled, and then at the start of this year, Kelnick took off, and Julio has really struggled so far. And there was that first game against Oakland where they each had three hits. They were all over the bases, driving in runs, scoring runs. That was kind of a taste that kind of whetted everybody's appetite. And if they can get those two going, yeah, I think it could jumpstart the offense. It could be one of the best duos in baseball, really.
Larry, after reading your article, I started thinking about the duos, the best duos in the MLB, and looking around, I stumbled across Juan Soto and Manny Machado. Then you have Mike Trout and Ohtani. You have Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman. You got Yordan and Altuve. If they are to get going, where would you place them amongst some of the best duos in the league?
Well, I think they could be right up there. I don't think they're going to be up there with Trout and Ohtani. I don't think anybody is up there. And you got Judge and Stanton, but Stanton can't stay healthy. Giancarlo, that's a pretty power packed one. But I think they could be up there with any of them, except for Ohtani and Trout, which is a cut above everybody. And hasn't done them much good. they haven't won anything or made any playoffs when they've had them together. So it's, that shows that you need more than a duo. And that's, to me right now, the thing that I think gives the Mariners the most hope is the pitching staff that they have right now. And it's as good a pitching staff as any team in baseball. And the rotation in particular, you've got four guys out of the five that you send out there that you feel have a chance to dominate on that particular each and every time they go out there. And over the long haul of the season and the dog days, that really will carry you a long way. When you have a rotation as deep as the Mariners do, if they can stay healthy.
When you look at I want to stay on the pitching staff for a minute. Is that something that you give a ton of credit to Jerry for? Because that's where I go, but you know more about this than I do. I'm just in awe of, like, it's like you cut off the head of a monster and two more grow. Like, there goes Robbie Ray, and then here comes Bryce Miller.
Yeah, I think it's a cumulative thing. Jerry, and certainly in the pitching
right.
Staff led by Pete Woodworth, and the analytics staff, I think, deserves a huge amount of credit, because they are the ones who are finding these hidden gems that have the spin rate, et cetera, that may have been overlooked, and they see the potential there, and then they turn it over to the pitching coaches to unearth what is there. Guys like Spire, for example, I think was a guy that they just saw had this potential, and he's been great for them. So, and then that's pretty much a lot of that's with the bullpen, the scouting staff as well in getting the guys that they've drafted, the Kirby, Miller, Gilbert all came out of the draft. And so you have to give the scouting department credit for that. So it's all under the purview of Jerry, but they're doing something right with the pitching right now. Their organization, I think, is looked upon as kind of the pitcher whisperers, because they take guys out of the draft and turn them into stars. They take guys who haven't gained traction with their previous organization and turn them into productive pitchers.
Larry, obviously the Mariners take care of probably the worst team in the league and sweep them. So during this time, I'm thinking, all right, I got my coach hat on, Larry, and I'm like, there's some things I want to see this team do. I want to see Julio not strike out as much. I want to see Teoscar hit for power again. I want to see the pitching staff continue to be dominant. Is there anything that you were looking to see during this series that you didn't see from the Mariners?
Well, first of all, not only the worst team in baseball, maybe the worst team in baseball history. They're well on that path.
No, it's fair. It's fair. Someone earlier critiqued me for saying one of the worst teams in baseball. They said one of.
The worst. Yeah.
No, they are an embarrassment to baseball. They really are. They're headed for 100. They're headed for about 130 losses, which is just staggering. I tweeted out a little while ago that I guess it was last night that both the Rangers and the Angels, who are teams the Mariners are trying to catch, they also played 7 games against the A's, and each of them lost two. They went 5-2, so you know they are a major league team who can beat you on a rare occasion. So for the Mariners to go 7-0, it's still something of an accomplishment, because you just kind of fluke your way into losing against them, and they didn't do that or haven't done that yet. Whereas the Rangers and the Angels each lost 2 to this team. So I would have, to answer your question, Pop, I would have liked to have seen a little more offense still. They managed 3 runs yesterday, 2 on home runs by France and a bases loaded walk. It's not like they tore it up against probably the worst pitching staff in the league. There were a couple 1-run wins. So still looking for that offensive breakout, which is going to be the turning point for this team, or the lack of a turning point. They still have to step it up offensively to match the pitching. It would be a shame if they wasted this great pitching that they have. You know, right now they're 2 games over 500, so to an extent they have wasted it.
Yeah.
They've pitched well enough to be a 600 percentage winning team, but they're barely over 500.
Yeah, 28 quality starts, and you do not have 28 wins, so at least wasting a couple of those. One of the common issues we've seen that's been really persistent with this team and this offense is strikeouts. I have a really hard question. I don't know the answer, and I don't think anyone does, but I'm going to throw it your way just to maybe add any just level of analysis. Why are they striking out so much? Bump's laughing at me.
I really don't know. I don't get it.
I don't get, like, is this kind of the team they always are? Like, there's so many strikeouts.
Yeah, it is glaring. Part of it is just they have a lot of guys who are strikeout guys.
I mean, yeah.
Teoscar Hernandez has always been a high strikeout guy. Eugenio Suarez has always been a high strikeout guy and always will. It's feast or famine with those guys, and you put up with that to get the home runs and the power. Kelnick and Julio are going to be high home run guys. So I think they've accumulated a roster full of high strikeout guys. But then beyond that, there's just been some poor the phrase of the day is swing decisions, which I never heard that used much before the last few years, but they've made some poor swing decisions. The plan at the plate hasn't been the greatest, and you know, pitching is really good right now too. There's you're going up there and facing guys who throw 100 miles an hour with nasty breaking pitches. And so it's really, the strikeout rate is up everywhere around baseball. So it's not unique to the Mariners, but theirs is higher than it should be. But I think a lot of it is just because of the roster they've put together.
When you look at this this pitching staff, whether it be the starting rotation or the bullpen, the relief pitchers, is there anything they need to get better at? Because we praise them a lot, right? And and for good reason. They've been dominant. They've been doing their thing. But let's get nitpicky, Larry. Is there anything?
Why haven't we seen a no hitter?
Is there
Larry?
Anything they can get better at?
Well, of course there is. You can always get better. Marco Gonzalez is their 5th starter. There's been a lot of debate about him. You can't put out they essentially around Marco have 4 number one type pitchers. No staff. You never see a staff with 5 number ones. I think he's adequate as a number 5 starter, but he's had a couple of really bad starts that have skewed his numbers. I think that's a spot to watch if he has a few more games like he did in Boston and Toronto, where they were out of the game by the early innings. You know, they do have some guys down in the minors, Brian Wu and Emerson Hancock, who are top prospects. I'm not sure if they're ready or if the team deems them ready. And with Wu, you have, I don't know how many innings he could pitch this year, because I think he only threw like 57 last year, and you don't want to go way above that. So it's going to be tricky to integrate him into the rotation. But, you know, I think, yeah, maybe getting a little more consistency out of the five spot in the rotation. But the Mariners are 6-3 in Marco's starts. So for a number five starter, that's not too bad. He's at least given them a chance to win a lot of games, except for the two that they were out of. And actually, they won one of those games. they actually came back to win that game against Toronto, where he gave up 8 runs. So, you know, other than that, I don't know what I would pick out. The bullpen has been as good as any in the league, and the rotation right now, I think, is as good as any in the league.
Hey, something we really don't talk about a lot, the defense, also really solid for this team. I know it's something Scott Service, you know, prides, and it's something that they've been great at, Perry Hill coaching up that infield. What have you seen as far as what stands out to you, even specific players, when it comes to defense?
Well, I think the engine of all that is JP at shortstop. You've got to have a strong shortstop defensively, and he's been consistently good. Caballero, who has taken over at second base, has impressed me with his defense. He's got a lot of range. And Suarez is having a very good defensive year. So, you know, I think the infield is very solid. And Kelnick and Julio are good in the outfield. I think Teoscar and Wright is probably just average, but there's a lot of above average defensive players on this team, so I think that is a strength.
Larry, what do you do with Colton Wong? I know they have a rotation going at that second base, and I feel like he's been getting some time just off of respect and him being a veteran. But at some point, I feel like you just got to go with Jose and say, all right, he's our guy. What do you think they do there?
Yeah, I think they've pretty much made that decision that they're going to go with Caballero for the foreseeable future until he gives them a reason not to. And they're getting Dylan Moore back in the upcoming few days, they think, on this homestand. So then they're going to face a decision. And the obvious decision is, do they send down Sam Haggerty, who has options left, or do they cut Colton Wong, who's not given them much of anything so far this year? I don't think they're going to cut bait on Wong yet. You know, $10 million track record. I would expect that the move would be Haggerty, but you know, you never know, because it's hard to envision much of a role for Colton Wong, particularly with when Moore comes back. So they've given him a lot of chances, and he's yet to really, he had one stretch of about 8-9 games where he hit pretty well. But since then he's back to struggling again. And it just hasn't worked out. It has not worked out.
Hey, Larry, last one for us here. We all love what we've seen from pitching. Defense has been solid. And it's so infuriating because we know if the offense can get going, this could be a really dangerous team. Thankfully, it is almost June, meaning they have 2 months to figure it out before the trade deadline. Now, if the bats don't heat up, do you see a trade just needing to be made for this team?
Yeah, absolutely, Stacey. Their DH is still hitting. We're 2 months into the season now, and the Mariners DHs are hitting .146 for the season.
That's it hurts.
Unacceptable. Yeah. So, you know, you don't have to wait till the trade deadline either. Jerry has done that in the past where he's jump started. I think they got Santana last year, well before the trade deadline. So, I would be very surprised if they didn't make some sort of a move to augment the offense. I'm not sure what's out there. It's hard to know who's available, but you know, one thing Jerry's shown is that he could put together a trade. So I think that's going to heat up as June and into July.
All right. He is Larry Stone of the Seattle Times. Make sure you're reading his work. It is always wonderful. He's got a good one on kind of what we could be envisioning if JK and Julio take off together. It's up on SeattleTimes.com. Thanks so much, Larry.
Thanks, Larry.
All right. Thanks.
All right. This hour of Bump and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacey.
Headline number one, the biggest story in the NFL today. That'd be the Cardinals releasing wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins. What's the real headline?
The only people who've wanted to leave Arizona more than D-Hop are the Coyotes. They're trying their best. They really are. God love them. D-Hop now an unrestricted free agent. Now, the team, this from Diana Russini, could still technically trade him. They have about an hour to do so if that happens before the release is officially official because it's 4 p.m. league office time on the East Coast. I don't think that's going to happen in the next 45 minutes. They also absorb about $22 million in dead cap by releasing him now as opposed to a post-June 1st designation. It's only a week away. You really were in a hurry to get rid of him.
You remember last week where D-Hop came out and said, I want to be in an organization that wants to win, that is stable, with a quarterback who
Where's
pushes himself
Where's the line?
And others. That right there was foreshadowing.
Yeah.
There's something going on over there. The relationship is not right. And I could imagine Kyler Murray being like, you guys hear what he said about me?
Throws the controller down.
Rips off his headset, says, guys, hold on. He's in a little chat group. But yeah, as you're reading the story, I go, yeah, this was bound to happen. We should have saw this happening last week, honestly, because you don't come out and say those things if you're happy with your situation. Mm. You're never completely happy with where you're at. Obviously, there's always some things that can be fixed and you can do better. But once you start talking about management and the quarterback, something ain't right. We should have saw this coming.
Now, this feels a little gossipy. And when Kyler Murray began his career, I loved watching Kyler Murray. I thought he was such a dynamic player. But this is not the first player we've heard kind of hint that Kyler Murray may not be pushing himself super hard. There's been an offensive lineman that played for Kyler Murray with Kyler Murray for two years or so. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to get gossipy, but are you guys starting to buy the idea that not only is there some just like a not great run organization with Arizona, but that Kyler Murray may not be the best, most self-motivated quarterback on the planet?
Have you ever thought that Kyler Murray was a good leader?
No.
I've never thought that about him.
His demeanor in that playoff loss to the Rams, I always go back to.
Pouty face. He has the face that my son makes when I tell him it's time to go to bed.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to go to bed. Dad, I don't want to go to bed. I go, dude, fix your face, dog. Fix your face. Change your body language.
Yeah.
Go to bed.
To his credit, he also has a face where he'll look young forever. So props to him. You know what I mean? Like, it goes both ways. Like a kind of pouting. Like, it projects very easily. But also, this guy is going to look 25 until he's 45.
Let's say the Cardinals finish with the worst record in the NFL.
I would be shocked.
You'd be shocked?
No.
Okay. Let's say they finish with the worst record in the NFL. They get the number one overall pick. Do you got Caleb Williams?
Yes.
Or do you stick with Kyler Murray?
Make the move.
Kyler Murray, though. Kyler.
Somebody will pick that contract up.
It would be so fascinating to watch in the span of, I think it will have been less than 10 years, them go Josh Rosen at, I think, 9, Kyler Murray at number 1 the very next year, and then number 1 Caleb Williams. And you don't have anything to show for it. You have one playoff appearance.
They also have Houston's first rounder next year, and I'm guessing Houston's not going to be super good because they're starting a rookie quarterback.
Yep.
I mean, they'll have a nice war chest,
as
it's called.
I think I'm sorry to interrupt. I think to their credit, they can speed up that turnaround, though.
I think so, too. But interesting problem they could have on their hands next year if they have the number one overall pick.
It's a very juicy scenario. I like that.
What you do. Cardinals are Basuda. They grab Caleb Williams.
Okay.
You send Kyler Murray to New Orleans. Derek Carr's over there on a 1 year. He's
How
not on a 1 year deal, but he's gonna break it or make it type of thing.
This guy trying to two step the NFC South.
Wow.
Send him to the South.
So typical. of Michael Bumpus, an NFC
or
South
Tampa
apologist.
Bay. Yeah.
He's like, you can send him. I'm just throwing out some names. Atlanta. I mean, just think about it. I'm just throwing out random teams.
Controversy in Carolina, Bryce Young.
These are just
Kyler
random
Murray.
Teams I'm thinking of that maybe you could go to.
Hey. It makes sense.
I know exactly what you're doing. We see right through your lies.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, the Celtics staved off elimination again last night. They forced a game six against Miami. What's the real
headline? And now we're currently debating whether we want to see a really cool comeback or deal with insufferable Boston fans. You can pick, you get one, you get either or, right? It's a real catch-22 situation. Is that what it is? You got one of the coolest comebacks. You've got the numbers on that. Or Boston fans coming back and then becoming even worse.
I just like history, man. I like being in that moment.
Bump said, pushing his glasses up his nose.
And saying,
I just like history.
I was there for that. There are times
what
I sit.
What are you trying to say about people with glasses?
Oh, no, Curtis. I'm so sorry.
Look at you. Don't you do that. Don't you do that. I think Curtis is the only person on all three shows that wears glasses. So don't you dare.
But is he the only person who needs glasses?
No, I need them for sure.
Yeah, I've seen Brock put on some readers.
But Boston, my hate for you runs deep.
Yeah, Lakers fan.
Runs deep. But I like seeing things go down. There are times I watch games with my kids. I go, hey, remember this. This might be something big. You know, so I'd like to see it go down, but I wouldn't at the same time. So it's a win either way for me. If Boston loses, go Heat. If they win, I get to see history. Jimmy Butler needs to play better. He only scored 16 points. 16 points last game. Miami never led. They had 16 turnovers. Boston had four starters with 20-plus points. Boston's turning it up right now. I think they're going to get it done and make history.
That's very cool.
Headline rewrites.
That would be very cool.
Headline number three. Some more breaking news. Dave McMenamin says he expects LeBron James to return to the Lakers for his 21st season. What's the real headline?
Well, that's today's least shocking breaking news brought to you by Dave McMenamin. No one expected that LeBron would actually leave. In fact, when I had this as a hype train that LeBron would end up coming back for the 2022-23 season, both of you were like this fast to board that train.
You know, LeBron's like that kid who drank for the first time and goes, I'm never drinking again. I feel so bad. And then 3 days later, you sober up. Be like, actually, I could do that again. You know,
I thought you were going to say bad. He's the kid who took one drink of like a Mike's Hard Lemonade. It was like, you guys feel that?
he was hungover.
I'm feeling it, man.
You know what? LeBron probably... He probably has like the same kind of diet that Tom Brady has.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, being 38 years old, looking at that, just like chiseled.
Ripped.
That guy probably has never touched alcohol.
That guy loves a... I promise you he loves a cab.
He's a vino.
I promise you he loves a good red wine.
You think he's throwing down a sixer every now and then?
No, absolutely not.
I think after you get swept, he went to the cellar. He brought out the hard liquor. Him and wife, he kicked it for a bit. He's like, yeah, babe, we're going to Greece next year. I ain't doing this. And then 2-3 days later, he goes, actually, Bronny's going to be in the league soon. I think I got to ride this one out.
I'm going to stay with it. All right, coming up in NFL headlines, the Steelers want to do something they haven't done since the 90s. And you know what? Even as a Seahawks fan, I wouldn't mind seeing it. Plus, Adam Sheehan has this team as his top sleeper team for 2023. Don't go anywhere.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Taking a look around the NFL, we are going to start in the AFC North. I know, Bump, it's not your favorite division, but oh, don't worry. I have a story about that one. The Steelers want to play a regular season game in Ireland. It's something they haven't done since the 90s. Now, granted, that was not a regular season game. It was a preseason game in 1997. And the director of business development and strategy, Daniel Rooney, says that one of the team's biggest goals is to return for another Ireland game, ideally a regular season game. So this is in part, and this is courtesy Pro Football Talk, their connections to Ireland go all the way back to, obviously, their owner. Dan Rooney served as the U.S. ambassador to Ireland from 2009 to 2012, and his family immigrated from Ireland, so they've got Irish roots ownership. So they would love to see the team play a regular season game in Ireland. And you know what? I'm a fan of international games. I know that you have to travel whenever the Seahawks go, but no. I think it's always really fun. And I think fans, when they've gone to like Germany or London, like they really bring it. You met so many of these fans and they're like knowledgeable. They're fired up. I think it's fun.
I was skeptical about Germany, and boy, did they prove me wrong.
Yeah.
They love the game. They know the rules. They're knowledgeable about it. Why not grow the game? Send them to Ireland. Man, send the Seahawks to Ireland so I can go specifically. Yeah. Because I've never been to Ireland. But no, I like it. The thing that surprises me is that I didn't think that the world, or at least Europe, would embrace football the way that they have over the past few years, man. Because it's a complicated sport. There are people here in the States who don't know what the heck's going on half of the time. So, no, I'm all for it, man. And I'm glad that people want this to go down.
I'm also excited that some of the international games are going to have great matchups this year. Like, you're going to be able to see, I think, the Chiefs, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's, you know that fans are freaking out being like, I get to see Patrick Mahomes. Like, it's one thing when you send over the Jags when they're at their worst. Now they have Trevor Lawrence and a really exciting team that's young but still exciting. But
right.
But to be able to see, you know, I'm sure people were elated to see Tom Brady in Germany. I know he... That was the other team that the Seahawks were facing, but that would be really, really cool. All right, next story here. We are heading to the NFC South for this one. Adam Sheehan of NFL.com has this team as his top sleeper for 2023, the Falcons. Yeah. He really likes the weapons they have, says that they could absolutely surprise people. I know you've been saying this. Yeah, who is Stacey. Your top sleeper team for 2023?
Yeah. They got Desmond Ridder over there. Drake London. They got Scotty Miller. Remember Scotty? Big catch in the Super Bowl that one year. They got Kyle Pitts over there. Bijan Robinson.
Okay, yes.
I'm telling you. ATL, shawty. ATL.
Bijan Robinson. I am more excited about than anyone else you listed.
No, you don't. Drake London?
I mean,
second
sure.
Second year receiver?
But
he's going to blow up this year. Watch.
Okay, okay.
I'm telling you.
But Bijan Robinson is really
great.
Yeah,
Bijan. You know Bijan? He, you know, we all make this mistake sometimes. You judge a book by its cover,
oh,
right?
Absolutely. I literally judge books by their cover. That's how I choose what to read.
I look at somebody and I think, okay, this is what I think the interaction is going to be like. And I heard Bijan Robinson speak and it was nothing like I thought. I thought he was just going to be a country, down south type of dude.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a different type of cat, man. And he has a great personality, very marketable. So I can imagine that he's already doing the equivalent of Beacon Plumbing down there in ATL with those commercials and stuff. Like, he's all over it.
Let's see. Who's my sleeper team? It feels boring to pick the Jets. They're not a sleeper team at all. They're more like a worst of first team. I don't think the Texans are going to be great, even though they've got two of the top three players in the draft. They're not my sleeper team. They were on his list, though, because of D'Amico Ryans as well. He thinks that they could turn things around pretty quickly there. I just think it's tough to do in the AFC. I think if I could have a crystal ball and see how teams turn out, I'd be curious to see, for the sake of the Seahawks, how the Rams are.
Mm-hmm.
They won the Super Bowl, then were horrible the next year. Which version are you going to get? Because they still have Stafford. They still have Kupp. They still have Donald. McVay's still the head coach.
Right.
You know what I mean? They don't have Leonard Floyd, but it's not like he was their most important defensive player.
They're the... Now, not when you look at the actual personnel or scenario or whatnot, but they're equivalent to what the Hawks were last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you had your top two. Everyone was saying the Niners and the Rams are going to be the dogs, and the NFC West end up being the Hawks and the Rams. So I think if it's the Hawks and the Niners. So I think that's what the Rams are. The Rams are a team where you really don't know what you're going to get out of that group, but you understand that there's talent over there.
I'm not saying the Seahawks, because I don't think you can be, even though the Seahawks could be better, I don't think you can be a sleeper team if you were in the playoffs.
No, they're... They're underestimated for sure.
If you thought they'd be in a Super Bowl, they can be your sleeper team, but...
Yeah.
And I agree, they're underestimated, but I'm going more like teams that were awful that have the best chance to... Like, mm-hmm. Teams that you're like, I don't really want to watch that primetime matchup, that team could be better than you
think. I keep going back and forth with the Bears, man. So look at the Bears,
I don't have as much faith in the Bears. I really don't. I think
there's something over there, you know?
Justin Fields is over there. They made a good trade. I do not have as much faith in the Bears as I, and that's more organizational too, as I do.
When have you ever had faith in the Bears?
Never. Truly never.
Never.
Never. To do not one thing.
Not since 85.
Not since 85 have I had faith. Not since the year I wasn't alive have I had faith in the Bears. Next story here. Lions wide receiver Jameson Williams was suspended last month for violating the league's policy on gambling, as you guys already know. In a new interview, his first time talking with reporters, this was yesterday, he says he wasn't aware of the NFL's rules on gambling.
So here's my question, right? And there are several players on this team that have been caught
that.
So if you have multiple players making the same mistakes, what did the organization do to inform these young men that they couldn't do that?
Yeah.
I know when I was with the Seahawks, it was too much information at times. Like, they covered everything, and they do to this day. So I got to put some of the responsibility on the organization and be like, did you prepare these young men? Did you let them know what they could and couldn't do?
Yeah, and I know that people are like, how did you know you couldn't gamble? I don't think that's what it is, because some of the players who were suspended, including players from another team, were suspended for betting on NFL games. It was not their own games. It was on their NFL games. Mm-hmm. Some of the players were suspended for betting on college games and placing those bets on team, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a property on team grounds. But yeah. Team grounds doesn't just mean you were at headquarters placing the bets. You could be in a hotel, like you're going on a trip to play, let's say, I don't know, the 49ers. So you're in a hotel in L.A. And let's say it's the night before a game, or maybe you guys are staying a day later and you're in your room and there's a college game going on Saturday and you guys place a bet. That's team grounds. Even though you're not on the clock, you're not playing a game, you're not at headquarters.
Your team paid for your own team grounds.
Yes. So I think that's what he meant when he said, I wasn't aware of the rules. This is a full quote. He said, it hit me out of the blue. It hit a couple other players around the league and on my team out of the blue. I wasn't aware of this situation, but as it happened, I took it on the chin. I was ready to move forward. As things moved on, I got the consequences. That's been my whole plan, moving forward from things, just looking at the better days.
That's all you can do, young fella. You know, you live and you learn. And I'm sure the Detroit Lions will have to look at their processes and stuff and do better at informing these guys and making sure they know what they can and can't do.
All right, let's head to the AFC South. New Colts quarterback Anthony Richardson is doing, quote, next level stuff at OTAs. That is from head coach Steve Steichen. He says, quote, this is from Colts.com. I've been really pleased with where he's at mentally. He's made some big plays today on the football field. This was yesterday. Made some great throws, great decisions, some really next level stuff that I've seen over the last couple days. So really pleased with where he's at.
Like, the NFC South is my division that, like, my darling division, right?
What? But of the NFC South, yes.
The Anthony Richardson is the player that I'm most excited to see. Like, even out of, I feel like Njigba's going to be great in this offense. Charbonnet's going to get his time. He's going to run the rock. Cam Young, like, I'm excited about these guys, but the one I'm most intrigued about is Anthony Richardson because he got the most hype. He is, people, I mean, Pete Carroll said it himself, he is probably the most athletic person to ever play that position. So I just want to see it, man. I'll be watching the Colts and seeing how they do.
Stacey, the Niners don't play in L.A. I know you guys get what I'm saying. I was trying to think quickly about, like, what would be a long way from Detroit. I just thought L.A. and then just said a random team. But I don't know the geography of L.A., so I'm also going to say that everything in California is just L.A., including Sacramento. It's all the same place.
Don't do that to us. LA's LA.
All right. Earlier, we played some sound from Clint Hurt. There was one cut that I specifically saved for this segment because I think it's a fascinating conversation about how roles are changing, positions are changing and evolving in the NFL. Don't go anywhere. All right, we are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners open a series against the Pirates after sweeping the A's. First pitch tonight, 7:10 p.m., pregame at 6 p.m. right here on Seattle Sports. George Kirby on the mound for Seattle. That's Around the Diamond brought to you by Shane Company. Seahawks defensive coordinator Clint Hurt says that one role in the NFL is ever changing and it's completely different today. So I wanted to start there because it's an important role when it comes to the Seahawks, but then also talk about how a couple different positions are evolving in the NFL. Let's start with what Clint Hurd had to say about safeties.
And you like to be left and right with safeties as opposed to having to designate somebody. Now, if you have a unique player like a Cam Chancellor, I mean, don't complicate it as a coach. Put that guy near the line of scrimmage, let him go wreck the game, you know, for the opponent. But to have a guy to have multiplicity is a great thing to have because, again, it challenges the offense when you can have guys do multiple jobs.
Man, Bump, not only have I noticed safeties, the roles between strong safety, free safety changing in the NFL, I've also noticed the importance of safeties dip and then come back up in recent years.
Yeah, safety is especially in a defense like the Seahawks, where you're going to see two high safeties and then a safety in a box. And don't forget, throw a nickel in there, who is a guy who could play the safety spot as well. You're getting more versatile type of players. Like, you look at Jamal Adams. People are going to say, all right, he's not the greatest in coverage, but he's asked to cover. You're going to see Jamal, when healthy, at that linebacker position. You're going to see Jamal, when healthy, line up in the slot. You know what I'm saying? You're going to see Julian Love do the same thing. So the safety has just became a hybrid position, like a tight end. The tight end, to me, is the most versatile person on the offense. You're asked to do so many things. That's what we're seeing from the safety, and we're seeing that, one, because of the evolution of the football player, right? I look at, like, big men in the NBA. Mm-hmm. When I was coming up, If you were 6'9", 6'10", your butt better be in the paint, getting rebounds, hitting hook shots, not, maybe a mid-range shot, but get boards and dunk the basketball. Now you're seeing big men bring the ball up and pull up from three. So we're seeing just the evolution of the athlete, and I look at the safety the same way. The safety, to me, if you are a strong safety, all right, when you go one high, you're in the box, okay? You're the tackler. If you're the free safety, you're the roam type of guy. Now, you look at Quandre and Jamal Adams. I remember when the season started last year, Quandre said, look, the great thing about this defense is you're not going to be able to tell who's going to walk down on the line of scrimmage or in the box because both of us can do that. This defense is going to allow us to do it. So you're – and what that does to an offense, it doesn't – it allows the defense to be less predictable, who's going to do what. Mm-hmm. And when a quarterback is looking at a defense trying to diagnose what's going on, it makes him study a bit longer or take that split second to really make sure he knows what he's looking at. So I love it, man. And it what it does, though, man, it kills off the linebacker, though, man. Like your traditional, old school, cowboy collar, neck roll, big
neck roll.
Dave Wyman type of linebacker. You know what I'm saying? Like that type of linebacker is fading away just a little bit. You're always going to need it because you're going to play teams like back in the day, the Browns or the Ravens, teams that run the football. Ravens are going to air it out now.
Yeah.
But there's always going to be a place for that guy, but it's kind of like the fullback. Some teams are going to rely on a guy like that. Some teams aren't.
I'm glad you mentioned that because that, to me, is the biggest factor when it comes to how several different positions have evolved in the NFL is the evolution of the quarterback, the evolution of the pass game. And I don't just mean teams are passing it more. I mean teams are passing it in innovative ways. It's just smarter football. And that has had an impact on multiple positions. It's had an impact on safety. It's made edge rushers the second highest paid players in the NFL and the second highest cost for franchise tags in the NFL for a reason. The second most expensive player outside of the quarterback, the guy who can get to the quarterback, right. The guy who can stop the quarterback. It's also lent itself to a change in position when it comes to offensive positions. Look at the way tight end has evolved, mm-hmm. right? Tight end isn't the most prized position on any team. I mean, outside of Kansas City with Travis Kelce, you go a couple spots before you find another tight end up there, like leading in receiving yards. Maybe Mark Andrews or someone like that would be in there. Would he be there if Baltimore had more weapons? Who knows? But I think that you still weren't even seeing a Travis Kelce type before you had Jimmy Graham and Gronk, before you had those two being 1,000-yard tight ends in a passing offense. Like, the way that passing offenses have evolved has changed so many other positions offensively and defensively, where athletes' bodies have changed, the responsibilities have changed, the way that coordinators use them has changed.
Yeah, it's... And that's what sports does. That's what life does, right? You look at the NBA 15 years ago, it looks different. NFL, any sport, it just looks different. And a position that's changed for me, too, is just the wide receiver position. Mm. Like, when I was coming up, you didn't have too many under six-footers who are getting drafted high. Everybody wanted the 6'3", 6'4", big guy outside. Why? Because a lot of the times you're just playing in two receiver sets, right? You're playing two and three receiver sets, and the game was more vertical and not as – and when I mentioned – remember I talked about A.J. Brown and those tempo routes?
Yeah.
Right? There weren't that many tempo routes when I was coming up. You had a route tree, 0 through 9. You had hitch, slant, out, dig, post. Like nowadays, I'm training kids, and I'm talking to them about their offense, and they're describing routes to me. I go, man, we didn't have the freedom to do the stuff that you guys are doing. So as the game evolves, you see the value shift in players. Now there's a value in a 5'10 receiver out of Ohio State. It was the very first receiver taken off the board. Zay Flowers, 5'10 receiver out of Boston College. What, second or third receiver taken? Jordan Addison, 5'11 out of USC.
Top three.
Because you're asking them to do different things. And I think it's great because what it does is it forces coaches to change, too. It forces them to look at offensive schemes differently. It forces them to use players differently. So change is always good, man. But one thing that always remains the same, though, you got to be able to run the football in this league.
Yeah.
Always going to have to be able to run the football.
Always. Can I go back to the slot receiver, though? Why do you think that receiver, is it a type of player? Like the Patriots had a crazy amount of success with their slot guys. Or is it that offenses find ways to attack gaps in his own defense or find ways to attack different levels of the field, value intermediate passing? Like, what do you think has been the biggest impact there?
You look for mismatches, right? And that's why we're seeing the shift in safeties as well. That's why we're seeing a lot of dime and a lot more nickel, because you want to match up to what this offense is doing. So the way I see it is the game was evolving, and you have a slot receiver. And if you're in like a 4-3 defense, a lot of the times you're going to have an outside backer on that slot receiver, mismatch, ready to go. So what do? All right, now we're going to play a bit more nickel. So teams start spreading the ball out a bit more. We need more nickel type of guys, because we're getting these four receiver sets, five receiver sets at a time. So I think a lot of it is the offense kind of dictates how the game changes, because it's the defense's job to match up to what the offense is doing. The offense found a mismatch with those slot receivers against those outside backers, so defense brings in more nickels, they're bringing more dimes, and they ask safeties to do more.
All right, one half of a favorite follow for so many Mariners fans that I know, Cespedes Barbecue, joins us next. Jordan Schusterman, he also writes for Fox Sports, and he's going to tell us how to fix the Mariners offense. Great news. We haven't told Jordan this is what we're expecting from him, but he's on the clock now. Don't go anywhere.